It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, we're back, up and running, rocking and rolling. Just checking the weather forecast real quickly, like I've been watching it all afternoon. We are thunderstorm threat free for the next 3 hours. That's a very good thing. Oh yes, it is, because I had some fun with the Goddess of Irony last night. We got to about an hour and 20 minutes into the program. There was a thunderstorm raging all around. And there had been a few that were loud enough to make it through the microphone and scare various and sundry household pets. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And about 7:20 or so p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, a real loud crack came through, and I said, oh, that was a good one, and that was the last thing I said, because the entire system shut down, and we didn't have electricity for, 12 hours or so, or more, because after all, and I could hear you all saying it, muttering it to yourselves quietly, coal keeps lights on. You know, except in entirely predictable summer thunderstorm events. Right? Right. So that's what happened. Give me a sec. Okay, so apparently we are hot and true on headon.live, but no stream coming out via the White Rose Society stream. Damn it. Just a sec. All right, let's see if we can get the horn the White Rose Society stream going again. There's always something. Always, and I do mean always. So anyway, we were smack dab in the middle of Moran Monday. We'd made it about halfway through the program. We had made it to halfway through Shirley's Memorial Challenge for the first broadcast day of the month. And then we got zapped because, we've got a private sector electric utility company. And consequently, they spend all their money on their shareholders and their executive class. And they buy extremely expensive coal when it's extremely expensive and then try to get the rate pay. They've got a whopping big rate increase before the West Virginia Public Service Commission, even as we speak. And summertime, I'm running two air conditioners, very little electricity at all. And you know, it's easy to have a $350, $400 a month power bill here. When, I mean, literally, very little electricity being used. I'm sure this will be another reason why they simply must have a rate increase. I got to remember to see when that shit shows up on the docket and go down and just try to make them a little bit miserable. I'd hate to miss a program over that, but damn, it gets frustrating. And every time this happens, I think, you know, I got to do that crowdfunding campaign where we put solar up and get the horn off the grid. But we struggle so much just to keep the monthly funding going that, well, I doubt if we could do it. But anyway, so that brings us to today, Titanic Tuesday, the third day of July, 2018. The program's live. And I do have thanks to send out to a couple of people, one of whom I don't know if needs to remain nameless, but I'll keep that person that way, as well as to Vince. Thank you both, because that we were able to, even with the program crashing, meet the Shirley's Memorial Challenge for the first day of the month. So that got done. Thank you very much. Thanks also to Frank. Frank jumped in to get us going for today. That means today's fundraising goal is only $180 instead of the usual $200. Thank you, Frank. And thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly, indeed, to Renee there in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Renee, for being a partial sponsor of the program. And thank you very kindly to Stephen in San Jose. Thank you, Stephen, very kindly for being a part of what keeps the program going. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to John in Indiana for helping keep it all the plates spinning. Thank you to Gene and Ann over across the pond in Mariolde, England. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to Janice in Wisconsin. Thank you, Janice. Those are our subscribers for this, the third day of the month. And so, in an effort to keep up and keep track and everything, we've got $180 to raise this evening. 10 at 18, 18 at 10, 1 at 180, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, 8 at 22.50, 16 at 11 and a quarter, etc. So if you want to help out and keep us on track for two whole broadcast days at the beginning of the month, run on over to headon.live and use the PayPal button. Or if you want to use the U.S. mails, there's always that, but send me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okay? And more on another topic later on in the program, but I wanted to get us started this evening. On the lighthearted side of things, I don't know. Some of you are on Twitter, some aren't. But oh my goodness gracious, I haven't had so many good laughs in a very long time as I've had today reading the hashtag Second Civil War letters. The White Wing has somehow deduced that the Second Civil War is going to like start tomorrow or something. Go figure. I mean, it's something that bubbled to the surface of the thin gray settlings that slosh around between their ears and pass for brains. Right. So, the fact of the matter is, it engendered a bit of parody, a bit of comedy. the idea that there's going to be a second civil war. And I have passed many happy minutes, perhaps hours today, just reading the damned hashtag. It's funny. It's good stuff. So I thought, and based upon a suggestion from our buddy Joy up in Michigan, that these thank you, Sparky there in the chat room under the rubric Man Cave, he folded space and left the moderating duties to Steve from Georgistan, and so he's just sitting happily in his semi-tropical man cave this evening, well, this afternoon for him, somewhere north of 90 degrees. Here in the fabulous Horn Studios, I might add, it's 89, and the air conditioner's doing all it can, but this is a south-facing studio, and it gets real toasty real quick. I mean, okay, not that you were actually thinking about this or anything like that, but yes, it's naked radio today. Part of the reason we don't do video. Naked radio in the fabulous Horn Studios. I would not ponder the imagery of that if I were you. It can lead to trauma and nightmares and all kinds of awful stuff. But Joy suggested an evening's reading, just for the fun of it, an evening's reading of the letters of the Second Civil War. And I agree with her. So, by all means, let's do.
Dearest Mother, rejoice. The tides have turned as we have managed to shut down their lines of communications by sending in a wave of black people doing ordinary things that they feel compelled to report. Chaos has ensued. The red hats are floundering. Mother, our unit is being held as POWs in a Waffle House just outside Raleigh, North Carolina. We speak to each other via our heroic code talkers, Jose and Carlos. Fortunately, the Red Caps do not seem to understand Spanish, or irony, or sarcasm, or grammar. Dearest, I am okay. I was almost captured by a curly-haired blonde girl with an AR-15, but she was just taking selfies with the gun, so I was able to escape. Best, Tony. My darling, after a stunning victory at Bowling Green, our unit refueled with hot cups of covfefe. We received our updates from General M. Obama via microwave, so we were prepared for the sea of MAGA hats and ill-fitting khakis. Why have they no tailors? Dearest, today is day 3 of being captured. I am in a basement of one of the MAGA soldiers. It's okay. His mom brings snacks down every so often. Dearest Mother, I have, as you bid me, gone to the war to become a man. The fortunes of that conflict have brought me in contact with the female of the species, as I so fondly hoped. The encounter was not the transport of masculine joy you led me to expect. Dearest Ruth, arrived in the deep woods of Bowling Green. I fear we may be surrounded. The enemy remains out of sight, but the aroma of hot pockets and hand lotion permeates the air. This may be the end. P.S. Don't check my browsing history. Dear honey, we have taken cover in a library for the night. There's absolutely zero fear the maggots will discover us. Not in a library. Dearest Cousin Marveline, we were so sure Colonel Nugent would be a leader because he talked so much about guns. But then we caught him befouling himself trying to get out of the coming action. This ain't good. Give all my love to our little chlamydia Jean. Love, Cousin Cletus. Yes. Letters from the Second Civil War. Complete with sad fiddle music. And thanks to... thanks very kindly to Joy for the suggestion. Oh, we need a giggle now and then. We really do. No, I think we struck a nerve with Steve in New York. Hot pockets and hand lotion. By God, that sounds like a song title, doesn't it? Yes, it does. Jack in Shreveport says, lighthearted, there's a Xena Warrior Princess Marathon starting later this evening on the El Rey Network. Yippee! Some good TV to veg out to. And I could certainly use some of that. P.S., are you doing a show on the 4th? Yes. Yes. And, in fact, Steve asked earlier, is there going to be a Friday on July on the 4th front? Yeah, there is. That's the plan. We started talking about that last Friday, so... No, it's not a Friday on the... It's a 4th of July on the front porch. Took me a minute. I'm running a little slow. It may have something to do with the lightning last night, so bear with me. Yes, there will be a 4th of July on the front porch tomorrow. So we've had our little fun. Now we've got to dive into the, I'm glad, Todd in South Carolina, Stan, I'm glad you got a giggle out of that. God knows. Yes, I did. I saved mine for the last one, Brother Deacon Asa. I did. Cause I'm an egomaniac that way. Yes. Oh, that's very good. Scott in San Diego with a note on some other stuff, which I will share later, says, I enjoyed the Second Civil War Theater, but it cried out for a sponsor. How about Mother Trump's Pure White Grits? Oh, how about Mother Pence's? Brought to you by Mother Pence's Pure White Grits. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, we're just going to get started on Titanic Tuesday here. Because we got Titanic... We got more End Monday stuff to catch up with. I mean, I was loaded for bear last night. And we had barely even scratched the surface, so we're going to re-scratch. Re-scratch? I don't know. English. It's a thing. Sounds very nice. Steve in New York says, I'll bring the triple IPA and the Thai chili chicken wings. Yes, by God, do. Well, he'll have to... the gimmick infringement coming from Ron and Raleigh. Mr. Shelby Foote is filing on you for gimmick infringement. Well, it better by God be zombie Shelby Foote. I think he's all gone now, isn't he? Subject line, Second Civil War. Lee in New York says, we all know how the Second Civil War ends. Hillary Clinton, we all know how the Second Civil War, I don't know if that it ends or begins. Hillary Clinton will be arrested as shots were fired over Fort Chappaqua. The far left and farther left will be battling for control. Trump proclaimed a house divided cannot stand, so it will be replaced by the greatest house ever built. I will get it built and place my name above the entrance. And I will get it built and place my name above the entrance. Because America cannot be great with Democrats in charge, the military-industrial complex will gladly make profitable weapons to destroy the non-American Americans. General Bonespurs will lead the troops to victory. Well, thank you. Todd says Shelby Foote would be proud. I know, that's the way it is, Irish Dave. So much more anity. So little time. Yes, and an addendum coming from Stephen, New York. That's Mother Pence's pure white Christian grits. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Renee. Renee says, that reading was hilarious. May you and your server carry on. Thank you, Renee. Thank you. We take our little moments of glee where we can find them. But now on to something that you're not like, well, I know. I'm almost absolutely rock solid certain, lead pipe cinch certain, that you're not going to hear this anywhere else. Well, this part you may. President Bonespurs is on the road today, or in the air. For the fifth time, he's coming back to almost level West by Cole Trump Genius stand. Yes, he is. Because as Governor Jim Justice, otherwise known as Governor Mr. Haney, said, I'm so excited to welcome my friend President Trump back to West Virginia for the fifth time since he was elected. Can you believe how many times the president's been to West Virginia recently? This is more evidence that truly West Virginia is moving from 50th to 1st, Justice said. Additionally, the president's visit to support our military and celebrate our nation's birthday is much appreciated by all. You got to understand that Jim Justice, who owns the Greenbrier Resort and Golf Course and whatnot, well, he years ago, it was his fondest wish to have himself a PGA golf tournament, and because he had a few billion dollars laying around, he was able to convince the movers and shakers that the Greenbrier would be a lovely place for it. And so, for a long time, it was the PGA Classic whatever at the Greenbrier, but that wasn't catchy enough lately. So it got turned into, and you wouldn't even know it was a goddamn golf tournament, because now it's just known as a military tribute at the Greenbrier. You know, with a 21 9 iron salute, I guess. Right. It's a military tribute at the Greenbrier. And, well, President Bonespurs can't resist a chance to demagogue the military, so he's flown down here today in proof of just how much he loves us hillbillies, right? Yes. There's only one problem. Even in the second Trumpiest place on earth, he's having a little bit of a problem drawing a crowd. One of the things that was not particularly well reported when he went down to South Carolina and went to war with German auto manufacturers, you know, in a state with a goddamn BMW plant in it, because genius. Oh, by the way, BMW said, well, you know, if these tariffs go into place, we may just have to lay off a shit ton of maggots there at the Spartanburg, South Carolina BMW plant. Yes, indeed, we may have to do such a thing. Mm-hmm. Because MAGA, y'all. But anyway, when he went down, he made this remark, and he gave himself he gave himself away because he said, "Well, you know, I talked to Governor, I talked to Governor Hayshaker, and he said that he begged me. He said, please, President Trump, come down here. It's only and he said, but I told him I don't do gymnasiums anymore. But he said just this once." Right. But the thing is, they'd never turned the cameras. That gymnasium wasn't half full down in South Carolina. And that's got to be distressing to a walking, jiggling, adipose wad of ego like Julius Geezer. And apparently they were right worried today about him coming to the second Trumpiest place on earth. Alabama now owns the rights to the Trumpiest place on earth. But we're still plenty Trumpy here. And just by way of background, this comes to me from someone I know who has asked to remain anonymous. And I will honor that anonymity. But I have no reason to doubt any of this. Because, see, in a state like West Virginia that is very, very white to begin with, as long as you don't wear your Julius Geezer T-shirt or anything suggesting you don't absolutely love Trump, then everybody around you will just assume that you love him like they do. And so they'll talk. It's the same thing when you get among a certain crowd down south and they start talking their and they engage in their casual racism. Because they assume that you're just like them. Okay. And so that's what happened today over at the VA hospital in Beckley. Now, Beckley's maybe 45 minutes from the Greenbrier via I-64 eastbound. Easily reached. But it's a Tuesday, and it's an afternoon appearance. A temporary no-fly zone was put in by the FAA over White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, between 4:30 and 8:30, so that's the time that we can expect Geezer Disgustus to be there. So again, my correspondent said, while at, and again, this goes back to, you know, they'll just talk around you. The maggots will. While at the Beckley VA Center today, I overheard some of the volunteers and employees talking. They said they were getting off work early to get on buses to go to the Greenbrier to make it look like Trump has a big crowd at his arrival. When one of them was asked if he was going home first to shower and change his clothes, He said, nah, I'm not cleaning up just to see Trump. The person who informed me of this said, I wonder if Justice is paying for the buses or the U.S. government. I wonder indeed. Like I said, you won't hear this on any other broadcast that I'm aware of. And again, this happened at the VA, with people who work at the VA, who were basically given a free day off with pay in order to go and put on put up a sham crowd for a sham president. Among other things, apparently Jim Justice is having trouble getting folks to come to his golf tournament. Our buddy Ron from the far frozen north is actually down here right now for said tournament. Ron's quite the golfer. He could probably put one club in his bag, and I had a full bag of clubs, and he'd probably beat me handily. Because I am not a good golfer. I used to just love the game. Still love the game, just can't play it anymore. So when you consider that account, in light of the fact that, you've got people like Scott Pruitt over at the EPA, it's not at all surprising to think that maybe some VA money might be wasted in order to create the appearance of a huge crowd for Donald Trump. Because you see, despite the fact that he hoots about fake news, it drives him crazy when he does not have what he feels to be his due and owing amount of adoration. And so if we waste some VA money that needs to be spent on taking care of our veterans to bus some people down to put up a phony baloney idea of adoration for Donald Trump in West Virginia, well, I guess that's just money well spent. But it's a pity that this story can't get the legs that it deserves. Because it's a perfect example, not only of the venality of Donald J. Trump, but of the utter and complete disregard for laws of ethics. You don't think any Trump campaign money is paid for those buses and paid a day's salary for all those VA workers, do you? And VA volunteers? No. He doesn't spend money like that. Marty wants to know, did he use Marine One or Air Force One? Well, any plane that the president flies in, any president, is designated as Air Force One. I don't think the airport down in Greenbrier County can accommodate a 747, so whatever it is he was in was designated as Air Force One. There are multiple smaller Boeing aircraft that are also designated as Air Force One. It's probably a bit of a stretch for Marine One. Marty says, isn't either a bit expensive? Money is no object. As long as, where Donald Trump is concerned, money is no object as long as the money being spent is of that specie known as not his but yours. How much is all this costing the taxpayer? Asks Robert in Australia. God alone knows. It would be nice to find that out. So that's, again, just one of those things you hear about if you tune in to the horn. Other stuff. Well, I don't know. Maybe for the next few days. Todd in South Carolina, Stan says, please make the Civil War letters a regular. Maybe for the rest of the week or something. I think I saw something about that earlier in the day. Ron in Raleigh says, did you hear? Scott Pruitt asked Dolt 45 to fire Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III and name him as Attorney General. Corruption, thy name is Pruitt. Oh, there's Scott Pruitt is going to go down in the annals of government corruption as a real pro. I mean, the sort of overview that the Washington Post published today was pretty thorough. And it's, you'd like to say it's shocking, but no. The headline at the Washington Post is, Pruitt aides reveal new details of his spending and management at EPA. Reporting by Juliet Elperin, Josh Dawsey, and Brady Dennis. Two of Scott Pruitt's top aides have testified to the in front of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, which is pretty much a mockery right now insofar as it's led by, come on, Trey Gowdy. Yeah. I'm not sure if Freedom Caucus member Jim Jordan's there, but we've got more on him in a minute. They were just interviews. It wasn't an open hearing. They were conducted by members of the staff of the House Government Oversight and Government Reform Committee. They happened last week. The story is datelined today. And it paints a picture of a Scott Pruitt who frankly doesn't give a damn about ethics or laws, for that matter, considering himself well above them. Three people who were involved with the sessions, familiar with the interview sessions, spoke to the Washington Post on condition of anonymity because of the retributive nature of this administration, vindictive nature. The former associate administrator for the Office of Policy, Samantha Dravis, talked to the aides from both sides of the aisle for several hours this past Thursday. And then Scott Pruitt's chief of staff, Ryan Jackson, talked to them on Friday. Among other things, they detailed Scott Pruitt's penchant for flying first class. Yeah. Among other things, Ms. Dravis pointed out the fact that Scott Pruitt had a tendency to ask his staffers to do non-governmental work for him. This is stuff that, had it been done by a member of the Obama administration, would have occasioned paroxysms of white, and I do mean white, hot fury over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Among other things, Dravis told the staffers that Scott Pruitt had asked her to reach out to the Republican Attorneys General Association. He had formerly been head of that group. And he wanted them to apparently help his wife find a job, stipulating that the job needed to pay $200,000 a year. Ms. Dravis said she didn't do that because, well, she was worried about conflicts of interest and violations of the Hatch Act. The Office of Inspector General is involved now. They're looking into it. They're looking into a lot of things regarding Scott Pruitt, because the man can't tie his shoelaces without engaging in unethical conduct. The former acting director of the Office of Government Ethics, Don Fox, gave an interview Sunday. He said that Pruitt had asked federal employees to do a number of things that had no relationship whatsoever to their official duties. Mr. Fox suggested that made it look as though Scott Pruitt had violated rules of official conduct. He went on and said, Pruitt is the gift that keeps on giving in terms of examples of how senior government officials, particularly in this administration, abuse their power and their position, and really treat the government's resources, of which the most valuable are personnel, as personal servants. There's only one problem. This is the sort of thing that if a lower-level staffer had done it, you would expect that staffer to have been disciplined by a civil servant superior in rank to them. Here's the issue, though. The only people who can discipline Scott Pruitt are arguably the chief of staff, the president's chief of staff, and the president itself, I mean himself. Don Fox said this falls squarely on the shoulders of the president, and he seems to do nothing but go out of his way to praise Scott Pruitt. Meanwhile, the spokeswoman for the House Oversight Committee said, the committee plans to wait until the conclusion of our investigation to release our findings. Selectively releasing interview accounts damages the credibility of our investigation and discourages future witnesses from coming forward. This is mainly because it's Trey Gowdy, and Trey Gowdy wasted God knows how much federal government money shrieking about Benghazi and her emails, from which there were leaks almost daily. But now they want to work on those leaks. They want to learn from their previous mistakes. Meanwhile, Ms. Dravis, in case you're worrying about poor Mrs. Pruitt, Ms. Dravis did eventually find work for Mrs. Pruitt through the help of a Republican lawyer by the name of Cleta Mitchell. They got her an independent contractor job at the Judicial Crisis Network. Judicial Crisis Network is another one of those wingnut welfare emporia in which otherwise unemployable right-wing ideologues get great big salaries because the organization, as the offertory hymn on Wednesdays goes, because it's all tax-free, hallelujah. And so she got an independent contractor gig setting up new offices for the Judicial Crisis Network, but that gig ran out, according to folks who talked to the Washington Post. Yeah, there was another story told about how Ms. Dravis and Sarah Greenwalt were asked to, you know, review, because, you know, they're government employees, so that means that they're just the little minions of Scott Pruitt, the way he looks at it. They were asked to review his lease agreement in a little joint on U Street. Before he relocated to the the room that he rented from somebody, from the wife of a guy who absolutely didn't have any business whatsoever before the EPA, except when he had a lot of business before the EPA, which is pretty much, you know, lately. Like I said, this is either the new normal or the new abnormal. And this stuff gets reported, and the hardcore dead-enders, the cancerous knot of maggots, you know, around 33% of the country or so, voters, say, fake news. That's just they're just going after Trump because he's trying to make America great again. Yeah, meanwhile, the business was recounted about Pruitt's desire to fly first class because he was afraid of being given a sad by somebody who hated the job he was doing. Committee counsel explicitly asked me at the beginning of the morning not to reveal what the committee asked me about. I don't know if there's an obligation to follow that, but I intend to honor that request as long as the committee counsel honors it as well, said the other witness, Mr. Jackson. But it was already reported by someone with knowledge of what went on. How bad is it with Scott Pruitt? And, you know, there's a question to be answered here. This is one of those moments when, well, you kind of miss Bart Cop out there in Tulsa, because he understood the workings of Oklahoma state government pretty well. Scott Pruitt comes to us from Oklahoma state government. And given his behavior, you have to wonder just how corrupt state government is in Oklahoma. Now, given that it's pretty much, for the most part, a wholly owned subsidiary of various hydrocarbon industries, the immediate answer would be, oh, it's really corrupt. But here's how bad it is. He was warned, Pruitt was, even before his Senate confirmation hearings, that he needed to avoid conflicts of interest. He needed to avoid ridiculous spending and misuse of taxpayer funds. It went so far that Patrick Wyrick, who is an Oklahoma Supreme Court justice and had previously been the Solicitor General of the state of Oklahoma, while Pruitt was Attorney General, basically a captive, wholly owned subsidiary, again, of various hydrocarbon industries. Wyrick even reached out to Pruitt and said, listen, the way you spend money like a drunken sailor, bub, you're going to wind up with some serious ethical problems. Naturally, Scott Pruitt ignored him. And now Patrick Wyrick is waiting for Senate confirmation to be the United States District Judge for the Western District of Oklahoma. His name has also been bandied about as a possible replacement for Anthony Kennedy. The only thing coming out of the EPA in that regard, EPA cannot speak to a personal conversation between Administrator Pruitt and Justice Wyrick. Among other things, Pruitt would ask young staffers, you know, the 20-somethings, to pay for stuff and then stiff them with the bill. Directly from the article, in one instance, according to former Deputy Chief of Staff Kevin Chmielewski, one individual was stuck with a bill of roughly $600 for a booking she'd made for the administrator's family during the transition. Chmielewski said in an interview last month that he was in Jackson's office when the individual approached Pruitt's chief of staff to explain that the period for transition reimbursements had expired and Pruitt had not covered the bill. The incident, aspects of which were first reported in the Hill newspaper, prompted Jackson to leave $600 cash in the staffer's desk drawer. It's just an ethical wonderland. It's a wonderland of free money and influence and God, I know. Clarity asks, what do you think you'd have to do? Take up cards or cocaine? You know, say if you held down 200 grand per annum. I don't know. It trade cars every couple of months. You know, well, I'm bored with the old Mercedes. Time for the new Porsche. Sheesh. Well, it's Titanic Tuesday, and this is some pretty damned well Titanic work. Note coming in from Lee in New York. To repeat my claim from last week, Trump does not care about the person named to the Supreme Court. He only wants to be in front of the camera. Probably, well, not a lot to argue about. Lee also adds, I think I understand Trump well enough to state this confidently. He does not like veterans. To paraphrase him, they were wounded. I like people who weren't wounded. Yeah. Well, but the thing is, they're great props. As long as, you know, as long as they can be induced to do his bidding. But these were, it's my understanding that in the story coming out of Beckley, these were actually employees and volunteers at the VA. It's Tuesday. It's a day that ends in Y. This is the corruption that is and always will be the Trump administration, the Trump regime. Onward, I suppose. What else? Well, like I said, we've got some catching up to do. There were, as you well know, a number of marches and gatherings all across the country this past weekend. New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston. But there were also keep families together rallies in smaller locations and in locations where maybe you wouldn't expect them. Like Huntsville, Alabama. And in fact, that rally had a little bit of drama that some of them, and they were huge, huge turnouts. In the major cities. But the one in Huntsville had something that the bigger rallies didn't have. Drama. Because, of course, as I've said before, there's a bit of courage involved with being progressive, liberal, that sort of thing, and areas behind the cornpone curtain, and this was no exception to the rule. Because there at Big Spring Park, which is a nice enough place in Huntsville, Alabama. A number of people gathered to protest the family-destroying policies of the Trump regime. Families belong together, not keep families together. Families belong together rallies, a nationwide day of action. Well, the folks who believe that families belong together showed up at Big Spring Park in Huntsville. And a former teacher from Grissom High School, I'm familiar with the name, that's sort of within my neck of the woods, showed up to argue with the people who felt like children, probably infants, probably shouldn't be kidnapped and put in concentration camps. The Huntsville City School System got all upset because the teacher who turned up, he hasn't worked at Grissom High School for roughly 2 years. He was only a teacher there for about 8 weeks in 2016, okay? 34-year-old Shane Ryan Seeley. A very interesting, a fellow of interesting appearance. Came to the rally because he was upset that people would protest the Trump regime's policy of kidnapping children and putting them in concentration camps. So he got in an argument with one of the people there. And Ava Caldwell, a rally organizer, said, "He pulled out a gun. I saw him holding it out in front of him. We just started screaming for everybody to drop to the ground. We all dropped to the ground, crying." Well, when everybody dropped to the ground around him, he didn't drop, so police on hand, it came over and quietly arrested Shane Ryan Seeley, age 34. He was charged with menacing and reckless endangerment, and the Huntsville police were compelled to, or felt compelled to, issue a statement saying that, in fact, it is not legal to bring a gun to within 1,000 feet of a protest in Alabama. Naturally, this means that the NRA will have to, the National Ruble, I mean Rifle Association, will have to get right on that, because it's clearly a violation of American freedom for good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians to not be able to bring their freedom protectors to a rally of people protesting our dear President Trump. Ava Caldwell said, "I guess you never really think it's going to happen where you are." The Huntsville police proudly noted that no shots were fired, and Shane Ryan Seeley was taken peaceably into custody. Do I need to point out that Shane Ryan Seeley, age 34, is a white guy? That's why no shots were fired. Nobody was stomped or beaten to death. Right. As of the update of the story today, Bond had not yet been set. The Families Belong Together protest went on as scheduled. and somebody ran over and had a look at Facebook for someone of the same name. The page is now not available, but it was said to be full of, imagine that, white wing extremist filth. And I guess it's just as well that the protesters there all dropped to the ground and started crying. Maybe that kept him from squeezing the trigger. It certainly made him easier to identify for the police who were on hand. So, I'm not, I need a little more, detail. Jason tells me, LinkedIn, idiot at idiot farm, according to heavy.com. I take it you're referring to Shane Ryan Seeley, 34. Lawful gun owner. And once again, a reminder that a lawful gun owner is presumed to be lawful until the lawful gun owner acts unlawfully. At which point, it's often too late to do anything about the unlawful conduct. In this case, no one had to die. Okay, thank you for the clarification, Jason. Yes, that's his LinkedIn profile, idiot at idiot farm. Brother Deacon Asa says, wow, how things have changed. Huntsville area Nazis, von Braun, used to send rockets into space. Now they're bumbling fools, flashing their peace during a peaceful protest. Well, I don't think this is that science gang from NASA somehow. If you want to, just look up Shane Ryan Seeley. And if ever there was a moment where a picture is worth a thousand words, that's it. Yeah. About 3 minutes past the hour, I should note that since we didn't get any conversation in last night, the lines are open, 304-574-8178. Line. The line is open, 304-574-8178. You can also get through toll-free from Canada or Mexico. Maybe we'll have to check in with Sister Carol Baker. She's vacationing south of the border. And see how that toll-free number works out down there. That's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Then, of course, from anywhere on planet Earth that you can get around the firewall, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And again, we're trying to raise $180 this evening to keep up with fundraising for the first 2 days of July. It would be really nice if we could do that 2 days in a row. But I also have something else I want to share with you. I had a note earlier today from our buddy, our buddy Scott in Sweden. And he asked me to share it with you. which I'm going to do now. Swede Beating, 2018 edition. Yes. As you know, when Scott decides to do something, it is pretty well scripted, and with complete with stage directions. So here we go.
So, my little hornies, think you can beat the Swede again? Just try. Now there are more than just the one Swede. There are hordes. Ah, ha, 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 ha. It's the World Cup, the real football, and one country will conquer the world, just one. South Korea tried and fell. Goal! Mexico, the same team that knocked the U.S. out, tried and fell. Goal! And now in the Sweet 16, only today the Swiss, the yodelers, not the master chefs, tried and fell. Goal!
So, my hornies, says our buddy Scott, it may be up to you to stop this mad zombie revival of berserking Vikings. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Our buddy Scott, the last of the brave knights standing up to dragon boat hordes, needs your help. Unless we can raise matching funds to put an end to this sudden and unexpected return threat of the broad axe and torch, Ragnarok will be upon us. Gloom and doom, doom and gloom, woe upon us all. Here's the deal. Our buddy Scott is putting up his collected hoard of Islamic silver dirhams, Danelaw pennies, and pillaged Wessex church gold equaling $1,000 to sink the Swedes before it's too late. The goal is to send Bob to Netroots Night School in, I think, Normandy or something. I'm uncertain as to exactly where the secret training base is. All we know for certain is that they speak a bastardized version of French, and so does Bob. Well, you know, bastard, you know, comes with the territory. Following the intensive gathering of the resistance in their hideaway and planning their strategy, Bob wants to head to the beach for a little amphibious training. Yes, a little family time. Will you help? Asks our buddy Scott. Will you beat the Swedes, this time more dangerous than ever, as South Korea, Mexico, and Korea have learned to their utter horror and dismay? Save the world. Meet the challenge. Send Bob and Agnes to Netroots Night School. And then a little R&R. Dollar for dollar challenge. $1,000 on the table. And basically what it'll do is it will cover the time during which I'm absent, and it will cover the hotels and rental car to get down to, actually, New Orleans, right. And hopefully there won't be any hurricanes, and I'll get to broadcast live from there and have all kinds of fun people to talk to. And heck, maybe we'll talk too as well, okay? That's the plan. Save the world. Meet the challenge today. There's $1,000 on the table. Send Bob to night school. Or, and this is an ugly little threat, do you want the new world anthem to be this? It works better if you've got the button on, Bob. This.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.
So there it is. Beat the Swede Challenge for 2018 is on the table for this month of July. And if we can beat the Swede, then Agnes and I are planning on going to Netroots Nation, doing what we can to once again raise awareness of the existence of the program, because you know there's no PR budget or anything. It's all word of mouth, that sort of thing. And whether it be 5 at a time or 10 at a time or whatever, your dollar is doubled. 1, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100. Up to $1,000 is doubled. So that you get the bang out of it in participating in this little challenge to let get us out of the hills and hollers for a little bit. Let us go down and do some work somewhere else. And then, yeah, I've got family, as you know, down on the Gulf Coast, and we will go and hang out with them and go to my favorite beach on Earth and hopefully clear out some of the cobwebs and come back refreshed and ready to run downhill to the November elections. We should pretty well have an idea of how it's all going to shape up, what the shape of the struggle will be by then. So that's the plan, the Beat the Swede Challenge 2018. Hold back the Viking hordes. Thank you to our buddy Scott in Sweden. And at 12 minutes past the hour, let's run over the phones and check in with Jim, who enjoyed last night's thunderstorm every bit as much as I didn't. Hey, Jim.
Hey there. Well, 2 + 2 = 4, and 5 will get you 10 if you know how to work it.
A river of beer over your grandmother's paisley shawl, a home in the country, upstairs and down.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure as hell glad they got that house off of you, because you sounded even worse than Margaret Hamilton.
Well, thank you. I was trying. Your little dog, too.
Do what now?
And your little dog, too.
Yeah. Wish I was there. I threw a pail of water on you. So, first, this guy who wants to do all these bizarre things, don't you realize, referring to Scott Pruitt or whatever the fuck his name is, that they don't need no fucking Hatch Act or NLRB Act standards?
Stinking Hatch Act, right, yeah.
No, they don't. They'll do any fucking thing they can, and they'll get away with it, too. It's just totally out, you want to talk about strange behavior and Viking conquest. These people are just berserkers. They really are.
Well, they're sort of a low-rent kind of redneck pillagers. Yes, barbarians at the gate, without a doubt.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they can just do anything. And
well, apparently in Oklahoma, you can.
Do what now?
In Oklahoma, you can. This is just Oklahoma politics writ large. Scott Pruitt had no idea that he couldn't just run amok in D.C. like he did back in Oklahoma City.
Well, you know, I was used to working in places when I worked for the government and in the military where you observed rules. You didn't break them. You didn't bend them. I mean, they were clearly established, at least where I worked. But over here, the further you get away from the capital, the national capital region, or in certain areas, you know, they'll do any fucking thing they want to. There is no observation of rules and regulations. It basically depends on the whim of, I guess, whoever is trying to enact some type of goal, for lack of a better term. I'm just totally flummoxed by stuff like that.
Well, I would imagine it would be to someone like you. Look at this business, and again, I'm not at liberty to say where I got the information, but really, busloads of VA workers from Beckley to the Greenbrier?
You don't do stuff like that.
Well, apparently we do now.
No, you don't. No. That shows you how much respect these people have for, you know, guidelines and regulations that are based solely upon DOD directive or departmental agency directive and public law. So that shows you how much respect they have for the law, because it's all based on public law, as I said before. And that's just typical.
Yeah, but this is we don't need no stinking again. Okay.
I know that. But, you know, that just goes against every fiber of my being.
I know it does. I was actually, you know, because the story comes out of Beckley, Jim, I actually thought of you as I was first reading this, because I thought about how outrageous you would consider the conduct to be.
I've seen it firsthand. I saw it firsthand at the Mets down here. And these people just did anything they fucking wanted to. You'd have women running around selling all kinds of magazines and makeup things and stuff like that. And you're not supposed to have stuff like that in the federal workplace. You're just not. You can't
But there's a scale or a continuum involved with this.
Well, I blew the whistle on some stuff like that. Let me tell you, I know what I'm talking about, and I caught some shit for it too.
So you've got considerable civil service experience, Jim. What's the recourse?
And military.
Well, but what's the recourse for this?
You don't have any recourse because they cover it up. Or you've got people in high places that are supposed to be the ones who enforce these regulations, and they don't need no fucking sad check. They just turn their backs. And I have examples of people like doctors who've worked in these places, okay, like the VA and the Mets, and they'll only work a certain. Now, this is a case that I know from personally, that this guy would do double time. He would sign his time cards for having been at work when he was doing emergency room work over at Raleigh General. At the same time.
Well, I mean, I understand your point, Jim, but I'm
blew the whistle on the son of a bitch. Guess what happened? But this is what happened. They fired his ass.
But you say they cover it up. How do you cover up the rental of you know, an air conditioned tour bus?
Oh, they'll find a way. They'll find some kind of function. They might label it morale support activity, that type of shit, or training day activity, staff training day. Those are the terms that I've seen used. I sure have. And I didn't see any training being done. And I sure as hell didn't see much morale support. And it caused a lot of consternation, particularly with people like me. And I wasn't afraid to pick up the phone and blow the whistle on, and I would go straight to the person responsible and tell them. I said, this is what I am going to do. And I said, I don't go behind people's back. I said, you know, I'm going to tell you straight to your face that this is not right and this cannot be condoned.
Well, I think it would be interesting to try to sort this out and find out where the money came from. Something would appear.
It's called the public dime, sweetheart.
Something would appear in the payroll records or on the budget somewhere, would it not?
I just told you.
No matter what they call it, it would show up. Correct?
Yeah, of course. And that's how. And it would pass right through. What they call the resource management people. And they'd sit it right up the flagpole, and it would be okay. It'd be fine. And people like me would catch nothing but shit for it when I blew the whistle on them. Sure did. You won't believe some of the shit that I have seen around here. Laws don't exist for these people around here, Bob. Regulations don't exist for them. They can cover up stuff and label it, and it'll get by. Because all it is, all this money is nothing but a funding authorization document, and it's nothing but numbers and a price tag, and it's a public dime, so who cares? It ain't coming out of their pocket. The taxpayer's paying for it. If you saw some of the stuff that I've seen, you wouldn't be asking me any questions. You'd be sitting there wringing your hands or whatever. It really is. It's just ridiculous. And how that money could be better appropriated and used. And here's the thing, you know, if they've got money left over, well, they got to spend it. Because if you don't spend it, well, as a...
Use it or lose it.
Well, not only that, as an action officer responsible for the program, if you don't spend it, it is use or lose. And they'll say, well, if you didn't spend that money, you don't need no money for next year. So what you better do is spend it and double your request for appropriation. And that's how it works, because this doesn't put funny money. It doesn't put zeros and ones and twos and threes and fours and fives and sixes on a FAD, or a funding authorization document, and then a request for, you know, your funds for the out year. And, you know, in a federal agency, you go 5 years out. You have to go for the next year, the next fiscal year, and additional years in planning what you need for them to establish a pot of money. And once that pot of money is full, you better surely empty it. Because you can't ask for no more if you do not. Ain't it grand?
Yeah, ain't graft grand.
Well, it's just considered under the term the cost of doing business.
And a government that won't do anything about Scott Pruitt is not going to do anything about a few busloads of maggots.
No. Particularly that crowd they got up there. My Lord, I don't think Boss Queed should have outdone these people. Enough of that, because everybody's heard, you know, there's no need to convince you about it, because it's a practice that's been in effect for a long time, and no one's going to do anything about it. No. Yep. One day that pot's going to run dry, and one day, it's going to, well... All these defense contractors and people who are swinging on the public tip that shouldn't be doing that, well, who knows? Maybe nothing will ever happen. Nah, probably nothing. I was just thinking maybe one day they'd be called to account. But I never condoned that. I never practiced it. And I can remember when I worked in South Carolina, I would ask for an appropriation for the next year. Or say, all right, I want $250,000 for my program. And they said, well, you better ask for $500,000. And then, of course, as part of your performance appraisal was execute budget. To 100%. And if you didn't use all that money on whatever you could, you were downrated in your performance appraisal. You didn't know this?
I've never been a federal government employee and never worked for a federal agency, but I don't doubt it. It makes sense. I mean, I just got a note. I got a note from Silent R. Lamar who says, "Brother Jim's right. It's not 5 years out. It's 10 years out."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It used to be five, now they doubled to 10, I understand, because of, well, they need to know what you think you're going to need and budget, and it's all attributed to that shows you how much things are going up, too. I mean, the cost of living now is just absolutely outrageous. I mean, goods and services and things of that nature. Oh, God, they're probably, since we started talking on this program, they've all grown up at least 75%.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just my little... Go over to New Orleans.
I'm sorry, you broke up there for a second. You fell out.
You're going over to the Big Easy.
Well, that's where Netroots Nation's being held this year, so...
What do they do there? I mean, I never could quite understand all that.
It's a big liberal-slash-progressive convention. There's a lot of. I mean, convention's not a good word. It's a gathering. There are teaching groups, activism, instruction kind of stuff.
Is there any way you can measure the ROI on that kind of stuff?
Not really. It's largely intangible. But there's 3,000 to 6,000 people wandering around and. There's going to be a radio row there, so if I can raise the exposure of the program, that's more people participating in the conversation.
Well, if that's what he said it'll do, you know about that, you know more about that than I do. I guess I just wondered, and I've heard some of the radio row conversations that came from you or in other places. And I just wonder how y'all measure the outcomes of that kind of stuff.
It's a matter of getting information out. It's a matter of trying to energize people, get people to be interested in and engaged in a process. And everything, the ROI, as you call it, is going to be kind of what happens in November.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That's the proof of the pudding right there.
And there will be a lot of people showing up for, politicians, candidates showing up to address because it's a fair amount of energy going back to various and sundry, home bases and locations where people can do their thing. And get people
excited.
Are you going
to have people like Randy Rhodes and some of the people all the
I'm not in charge of the Radio Row, so I don't necessarily know who's going to show up. But I know I've been told that there's going to be one and that they expect a good turnout for it.
Well, like people like Stephanie Miller or Randy Rhodes or Tom
I kind of doubt Randy or Stephanie would be there, but. Probably, I can't say who will or won't be there because I simply don't know. It would be speculation.
Well, I tell you, you're gonna need a whole lot of energizing. It's gonna be a big. It better be a big to do if you want to have the ROI come out in November. That's for sure, because you can believe that those other people on the other side. They've already begun spending gazillions of dollars.
Oh yeah, and they're much better funded. That's one of the main points is that we're not going to outspend them. You cannot outspend the Koch brothers, but you can out-activism them, and you can out-brain them. But there's a learning curve involved with that too. And to have a sense that we did not have in 2016. Of when we were being manipulated.
Oh, they didn't have this the year before last?
Oh, no, they did, but I'm talking about the way things fell out in 2016 when a lot of people got manipulated who didn't know they were being manipulated.
Well, you're talking about the Trumpazees or...
Oh, not just them, but there was a lot of dirty business on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, but I don't know. The whole system has gotten so convoluted and so fucked up that, you know, I really don't know who to trust and who is really doing what. I mean, I guess that's just my lost faith in things, Bob. I don't got that much anymore. I really don't.
Well, what I do know is there's only one way to win, and that is to vote in such overwhelming numbers that they can't cheat.
Well, that's true, but I mean, how many people? For example, you were talking to your friend in Texas the other night, and he said that there were a lot of Democrats that districts have been so gerrymandered that Democrats shouldn't even bother to go to the polls.
Well, they feel that. They feel that way because it's rigged. I mean, you've got districts in Texas that look like serpents. Remember the original the origin of the word gerrymander.
Albertieri.
Exactly, and the district that was drawn up specifically for him looked like a lizard. So that it was referred to as a gerrymander.
I know. I used to teach that stuff when I was a school marm for a few years. I certainly did. Know well where that came from.
I know you look fabulous going to class in your gingham back when you were school marming, Jim.
Okay, counselor, you open that door.
No, you did it. You said school marm. You started this. Let's be clear.
That's all right. You open that door, and well, I may have left it cracked, but you opened it. Now, what are you wearing tonight?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, my God.
The horror.
And Buffy is right there for the world to see.
No, that's why there's no cameras involved, Jim.
I mean, you don't need cameras for that. I just got a vivid imagination.
Oh, I know. Theater of the mind. That's what it's all about. But I mean, my God, it's still 89 degrees in the studio, and I'm
as hot as a crock.
I'm sweating like a whore in church.
Oh dear. Well, are you gonna be in uniform tomorrow night for the blast? Are you gonna be doing your military toe tap?
No,
boots.
I don't think so. It's you know, the front porch is an informal affair.
I was just picturing you as a. Did you ever see the cover of Byron Breckinridge, the book?
Yes.
With that majorette on the cover.
Yes.
I was just thinking about that. That shows you how twisted and convoluted my mind is. Oh, dear God. So, well, I guess that you should have a good time tomorrow night, but God, sitting in that studio with all that equipment going, it must be like a microwave in there.
It gets pretty uncomfortable.
Oh, my God, Bob, you could drop 5 pounds in one, but it's just pure sweat.
We won't talk about it. Yeah, I've gone through several paper towels so far, an hour and a half into the program.
Well, at least you're not getting blown out like last night, because I sent you an email.
Oh no, I saw the email. You said look out, and I thought, oh dear, it's coming. It started over there, and it's headed this way.
And it was there quick. As a matter of fact, I had barely sent that email before I could hear the boom. You know, from where I was, or basically through my earphones here, and then you went off the air, and so I thought maybe you got hit pretty bad.
It was very localized, so I think there is probably a direct hit to a transformer.
I'll guarantee you one thing: when it gets going, you've got to watch out for that kind of stuff because you know. Well, that goes without saying.
Well, that's what all these uninterruptible power supplies are for.
I hope they function.
They do. One has got to be replaced, but they do, and that's just a matter of of replacing the battery. By the way, going back to the whole government budgetary process, Irish Dave wanted to know, would you ask Jim if he knows whether the VA operates on the old fiscal year expiring on June 30?
Yeah. The fiscal year starts ends on September 30th.
Okay, so they're still whatever money this was that was skeevily misappropriated is in an old is in a budget that's coming to its end.
Yeah, state F wise, it is on 30 June. Federal ends on 30 September. That's how that works.
Okay.
That's when your new fiscal year begins. I've often wondered why the state was different from the federal. Why couldn't they operate on the same days? Because that costs money, too. I mean, it costs a lot of money to have different calendars, schedules for different, you know, operations. Because, you know, both interact with one another. And believe you me, if there's a way to jack up the price, they'll find a way. I swear to God. And like I say, yay, hey, is the victory VA. I'm going over there. And what are they going over there for? Well, I mean, what are they having? Speaking of military toe taps, that's what I I use that term.
Well, again, Jim, Jim Justice changed his Greenbrier Classic golf tournament. That didn't have enough freedom in it. It didn't have enough demagoguery in it. It didn't have enough bloody shirt in it. So instead of even mentioning the idea of golf, it's just a military tribute at the Greenbrier.
Well, who's going to be there? Are the Blue Angels going to fly over?
No, it's just a golf tournament. It's a PGA golf tournament. But now with more freedom.
Well, I just wonder, are they going to have, like, military units there? Or do you know anything about the program?
No. No, I mean, they change, you know, I'm sure they'll blow a bugle or something and have some martial music and talk about, you know, ride the backs of the military. And since it's a military tribute, that's probably the excuse they will use for the bus excursions.
And, I mean, that's deserving. Just they're doing that in
but the whole thing.
People they serve.
But he's not. It's if I read the story correctly, he's just there and gone. 4:30 to 8:30, and it was my understanding.
Trump.
Yeah, Julius Geezer.
Oh, he. All right, he is coming over.
Yeah, today.
Is he gonna spend the night at the Greenbrier?
No. The FAA put in a no-fly zone, temporary no-fly zone over White Sulphur Springs for 4:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Tomorrow?
Today.
Okay, what's he doing over there today? I'm just dumb tonight.
Because of the kickoff of the damn golf tournament.
So Trump's going to be, he's over there now.
That is my understanding.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a. I just wonder what kind of attendance they'll have when he does that. You said he did Phillip Airport High School, Jim?
Right, exactly.
Oh, my God, I thought that place would be just chock full of those idiots. Because when I heard the people hollering and stuff on your program, they had it. It sounded like, they had a whole billion in there, you know? Of course, idiots can't make a lot of noise, can't they?
Well, that, you know, all those gyms, civic centers, arenas, whatnot, they all have a certain acoustic quality. That's why you seldom see him speaking at outside rallies. It creates,
you know,
a greater sense of noise and presence.
I wish I could cast a spell over the people there, and they would start getting acquainted the way dogs do.
Jim, damn. But anyway,
really?
it's a dinner function, is what it is.
Could you imagine them starting to script and sniff each other's asses and stuff like that. The way
Trump only probably does that with porn stars and hookers. But it's described in the news account as a dinner function. So this is the interesting part of that. The plants that were sent down there that were bussed in weren't even there to hear him speak, because God knows they'd never let the hoi polloi into the Greenbrier. They're only there to show up at the airport and stand on that blazing hot tarmac and cheer for his arrival and make it look like a whole bunch of people turned out to see his plane land.
I haven't seen any coverage. Of course, I haven't been watching the news. I haven't felt too well, so I just haven't paid much attention to it. I don't know if he's going to be there today or tomorrow, or whether he's going to spend the night there and be there for the tournament. But I guess I wonder what he's doing tomorrow.
Tomorrow he's back in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's just 2 hours away. He can just be all kinds of places. I wonder what kind of function he's got planned for the 4th.
I would bet you he's going to be at one of his seedy golf courses, either that pile of bricks down in Florida or that that nasty thing up in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. I've often wondered what it would look like with him up there on roller skates with a big Roman candle stuck up his ass.
You can't say that. You can't say that.
Well, I just did.
Well, but you can't. You need to retract it.
I did.
But you need to retract it, or else you're liable to get, or you'll get me a visit from the Secret Service.
Well, they're not going to see anything. No.
Remember Agent Fred? He's still out there.
Oh, shit. Agent Fred, go to hell. I've dealt with enough Agent Freds by the time I believe you read. I've had to tell some of them to go to hell, too. I mean, you know, they act big, but, you know.
Well, email me your street address so I can send them your way so they won't bug me.
Be glad to. Love to have the company. They don't bother me, Bob.
By the way, I just got a note from Kelly. Oh, hell yes, he's at the Greenbrier. I was stopped in traffic on I-64 before Caldwell because he was coming in. 40 minutes, no one in the cars around me voted for him. Everyone was pissed. I just told them, your tax dollars at work.
Well, he's there. He'll probably spend the night. He might spend the night there.
He is not spending the night. He is flying in and flying out. That's why the 4:30 to 8:30 no-fly zone.
Well, God, Bob, thank you so much. I was just worried myself into a fret that he might have to stay at the Greenbrier, because that's really not one of his real taste when you compare his digging to New York.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, Jim, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Yeah, what's the matter with what I just said? Now, come on now.
No, I understand. It's not tacky enough. It's not Baroque enough. I mean, God knows the Greenbrier has some tacky to it, but, you know.
Well, you take care, and I'll talk to you later. And it's been real nice, and don't let that house fall on you again, man.
I won't. And you keep that calico nice and starched, all right?
I will, and just tell them where I live.
It will do. See you, Jim.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye now. It's our buddy Jim calling from over Beckley-ish. And just a gentle reminder, we had $180 to raise this evening. We've still got $180 to raise. And it's we're three quarters of the way through the second hour of the program. And we have none other than Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
It's like magic, Bob. I'm telling you, it's like magic.
It's magic. You know, never believe it's not so. It's magic.
Well, that too. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Nothing again.
That trick never works. Hey, now did I ever explain the way I do all the audio in this household?
No.
I have anything that puts out audio. I it feeds into a little transmitter thing, and there's a little receiver about the size of a deck of cards that I have in my shirt pocket of my T-shirt, and I plug my earbuds into it. So I can walk all the way around back and dump the trash or do the laundry or whatever, and whatever audio is playing, I can hear it. And then late at night, I can crank up tunes and stuff or this show as loud as I want it and not disturb anybody. So I listen to the feed of the show, okay, on the headset while I'm ringing in on the phone. And because of the delay,
right,
I think Jim was in mid-sentence in my right ear, but in my left ear, you're giving a funding update and welcoming me aboard. It's magic, I'm telling you.
Well, it would probably induce psychosis on my part.
It's like the old 7-second delay.
Respect the 7-second delay we use, yes.
Yeah. And that was done, one of the early ways of doing it was on a cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite one was at WWDC in Washington, back when it was an MOR station with a talk show at night, hosted by the late, great Fred Fisk, who came to Washington, I guess in the mid-40s, on a train from New York, looking for work, and he ended up on the local station that was hooked up with the Mutual Broadcasting System and
Be-doop.
Was the official announcer. Yeah. But 3 out of 10 people will get the be-doop. But anyway, back in the 40s, he in Roosevelt's administration, Fisk was the official Mutual announcer for any White House speeches, and he would introduce President Roosevelt to the Mutual listeners. But anyway, by the 60s and early 70s, he had a evening talk show on this station, and one of the announcing staff basically prepared the cart, because went back in those days, when someone would say a naughty word or phrase, they would dump out of the live feed, hit the cart, and on the cart was one of the other announcers saying, "Now, now, now, Mama don't loud talk like that." And by the time that had played, it was recording for replay 7 seconds later, you know, thus skipping over the naughty bits. And speaking of naughty bits, hi, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm just great. How about
naked?
Yeah.
Naked.
Yes, and it is naked, not naked. There is nothing untoward taking place. I merely have no clothes on, that's all.
It's the devil's work, I'm telling you.
It's goddamn hot in here.
Oh, I know. It's hot here. It was lovely earlier today when I was out and about. But and it's going to get real toasty as the week progresses, and that's here in the coastal area. The further inland you go, it's like, you know, you've got to hire a staff to come in, and that's what you need. You need a nubile woman to come in every 15 minutes to baste you, you know?
Well, I do. That would be Agnes.
Well, there you go. You're living the life, my boy. And what the hell would I call for? No, you and Jim kind of did the setup for what I was going to talk about, talking about the excesses of the Trump administration.
Yes.
And the outrageousness of it. I mean, it's fairly traditional to have a little of that stuff going on in any big organization, especially irresponsible governments. But they have worked it up. They've ratcheted it up to 11. You now turn that thing up to 11. What did Scott Pruitt do before he was head of EPA?
He was the Attorney General of the state of Oklahoma.
Okay, I couldn't remember what his position was in Oklahoma. Well, I mean, aside from missionary. God, I lived in Oklahoma for like 18 months in the mid-90s. I'm telling you. I mean, there are armpits and assholes, geographically speaking. And somehow Tulsa, Oklahoma was worse. You know?
Yeah.
I don't even like to think about it, so I won't. But yeah, I was thinking about this the other day, just the fact that they have taken it, I was going to say to a new high in terms of abuses, but you don't register those things in terms of high points. They're low points. It's like further and further down into the, you know, we're past the gutter, we're past the sewer. What comes after the sewer in terms of depth?
Cesspit?
Subterranean.
Cesspool?
Subterranean.
Septic tank?
Yeah, but that's where they are. And that makes me think that in the problem, every problem is like, it's like a math problem. In the problem itself, there are keys to the solution. And that may well be the key to the solution, the fact that there are so many excesses and outrages by this crew. And the reason I say that is while I was waiting to come on, I was looking at the number of people who voted in the 2016 election, and it was close to 138 million people bothered to vote, okay?
Yeah.
And we all remember that Hillary got about 66 million, and Trump got about 63 million, hence the 3 million popular vote difference. But they weren't the only two running. Would you believe that close to 11 million people who voted in 2016 voted for someone other than Trump or Hillary? And 11 million people is not an inconsequential number. And when you add it to Hillary's nearly 66 million votes, that's 77 million people who voted versus Trump's 63 million, which is what I use for justification to say there are more of us than there are of them, at least in terms of people who come out to vote. And if some large number of the people who plan to vote in 2018 and 2020 will just simply pay attention and get their wretched acts together long enough to study up on stuff and actually go out and cast a vote, there may be some, silver lining in this dark cloud. Because I didn't really come from a dysfunctional family, so I can't really compare myself to these kind of horror stories that you see in the news or on the afternoon talk shows like Maury and Jerry Springer and all that crap. But I did have my share of dysfunction in the family. But if you can imagine where it's just an ongoing, nonstop, never-ending thing, where it's all that you know, and it's happening morning, noon, and night, sooner or later, that takes a toll on people, on the psyche and on the soul. And just, you know, in common everyday life, you can only stand it for so long, and then it's either going to set you crazy, or it's going to set you off, or it might, you know, ratchet something internally that gets you, engaged enough to try to do something to stop it from happening anymore. And we're headed that way, I think. You know, it's like, I don't know whether it's you or one of the callers uses an expression about, I can't remember the expression, but it's like the relentless nature of the outrages and excesses and abuses. And we're not designed for that degree of madness and stress and nefariousness. Now, I know you'll tell me that I'm, you know, the relentless optimist, but I really think that it will make a difference if people react in numbers enough. You know, it'll be hopefully a national, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore. We're capable of better, and we sure as hell deserve better.
And I'm doing my dead level best not to do my usual Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine bit, because there's stuff out there that would maybe prove a little bit disturbing, like I'm about to do it. The number of young male millennials who are breaking for Trump.
But I key them in with Trump's 63 million versus 77 million who didn't go that way.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what are you doing? What are you doing with the Gary Johnson vote in that?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be a perfect transition or a perfect translation. There's always going to be these third wayers. You know, the Jill Stein people who, you know, say a pox on both houses, and sure as hell we end up with more pox than you can shake a stick at. You know, they sure as hell got what they wanted. And the people who voted for Trump probably think they got what they wanted. But there's going to be a number of people who by the time 2018's election rolls around, or 2020's election rolls around, will see what they did. They wanted a change and voted for what they thought would be a workable change, because, yeah, he was the businessman. He was the millionaire. He was, according to the PR, was a success at everything he touched, if you didn't take reality into account. And a fair number of people suspended their disbelief long enough to cast those critical votes almost 2 years ago. So, yeah, but, you know, that's part of why it happened. What I'm saying is, some of those people, by the time 2018's election rolls around and 2020's rolls around, will have seen and understood the error of their ways. So you've got to lump them in to the us versus them breakdown of numbers. I'm just not, maybe it's orneriness on my part, but I'm just not going to concede that it's over, that there's no hope.
Well, no, I'm not there either, but I'm just one of those people that does the whole reality spoken here kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that.
And you know what's going to happen to the evangelicals if he gets this nominee onto the court?
Oh, they're gonna have spontaneous jizzing and pants and panties all over the planet.
Well, thanks for that image. But
don't blame me if you're not wearing.
No, Scott, they'll double down. Okay, they're going to be sold. They're going to go from being supportive to being active foot soldiers. And you dare not, if you go to one of their churches and you do not turn out to vote for Donald Trump in 2020 and you don't go out and vote for your Republican in 2018, you dare not show your face in church. And the threat of a burning hell to somebody who believes in that silliness is a powerful inducement.
Yeah. But on the other hand, church attendance.
I mean, let's remember those 48%.
What it used to be.
It was enough to, well, never mind. That 48% that didn't show up to vote at all? Remember, let's not delude ourselves into thinking that those were all just disheartened people who stayed home because it wasn't Bernie. There's a whole bunch of didn't bother with it Republicans, too.
Oh, I know.
And some of them stayed home because they thought it was a lost cause because Trump was going to lose.
Well, a lot of the disenchanted Republican voters who couldn't stomach voting for Trump basically tossed their vote away by voting for that bald-headed guy from Utah, whose name I can't remember.
You know
the guy I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
I do, but there wasn't that much of him.
Well, or candidates of that ilk. In other words, anybody but Trump except Hillary. The hardcores, you may as well give up on them. I'm talking about the influenceable people on both sides of the aisle who hopefully will have seen the error of their ways, because it turns out this is way more serious business than anybody thought. They didn't think that it was going to happen. And sure as hell, when you get into that mindset, it turns around. Every nefarious thing that has occurred since it has happened will probably work to our benefit with some number of people who will want to undo what has been done to the extent that that's possible. And it's not really possible, because he is, by the time the first 2 years are up, and I'm basing the 2 years from November 16 to November 18, but by the time those 2 years are up, he will have already, and you talked about it earlier on the show, he's all in just 18 months, or a little more, there has been more, and this is just the stuff we know about, the excesses and the graft and the dirty dealing and it's like, where the hell is the press? This, not to veer off into something else, but while I'm thinking about it, you mentioned earlier at these rallies that these events, there are independent news crews covering these things. Okay. Now, if you're at an event being covered by an independent news crew, they have say as to what their cameras are pointing at, don't they?
No, a lot of times it's pool coverage, and they are allowed to stick. They are allowed to point their cameras at the podium.
Allowed by whom?
By the nature of the pool coverage agreement.
Well, that's horseshit. You mean to tell me, if somewhere in the stands, a group of people seated midway up the stadium tier, okay, a group of people, 15 or 20 of them, spontaneously combusted in that section, that the cameras would not be allowed to turn to capture that?
Well, consider what happened last week. I think it was in Duluth, there was a protester. And it was only after it was all over that we got independent footage of that guy being run out of the arena. The cameras covering the event didn't turn around and look at him.
Well, somebody needs to rethink affixing their signatures to these agreements. I mean, it's bad enough that news is as shoddy as it is in today's world, that they're willingly signing agreements not to to veer. You know, what are they? They've locked and fixed the turret on the camera. I mean, it's Jesus. We are fucked if that's the case.
It's not inspiring. I'm not going to argue with you about that. I mean, it's...
Well, now, see, now you've understated me, you son of a gun.
It's my job.
Well, I just...
But, I mean,
we've seen
it time after time after time. And look, you have to kind of have a visual of what these setups are like. Because these cameras are on tripods, and they're all set. They're sitting next to each other. Sometimes Donnie Dimwit will reference them. See, they're all back there, the fake news with their blinking lights, and now all the lights are going to turn off. Well, the lights don't turn off because they're
on risers at the rear of the.
They're not particularly mobile. It's not like it's a shoulder-mounted camera.
Yeah, but any camera on a tripod that I've ever seen has an up-down axis and a left-right axis.
It does, but if you've got one right next to you, you can turn it into a domino effect by trying to turn around.
Well, and outside of the improvement, we'll never notice the difference. I don't know. I hate to be the no, I don't. I don't hate to be the relentless optimist. And maybe it's not even optimism. Maybe it's looking at factors at play that aren't getting a lot of play. And I don't know for sure because I haven't had expanded cable for some months now, and I can't tell you what a joy it's been not having the first thing I see something new to bring me down day after day after day.
Oh,
not
look,
I'm
I mean, Agnes
stuff.
And I get up and engage in our little nasty little habit every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken to referring to it as morning conniption. And yet the stuff that they still miss is astonishing. Days and days and days now, and I have yet to see either of them or anybody on that, any of the regulars, mention the business with Anthony Kennedy and the, you know, billion-dollar loan that his boy gave to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Now, what accounts for that? Is there like an editor's desk where they give a lineup and you shall not stray from it?
Yeah, they script out the segments, and unless something really really seriously breaks, they don't deviate. I mean, they'll happy talk around things, and the format takes a little bit of a whipping here and there. But remember, they also don't do 3 hours of television. If you were to pay close attention to it, you'd find that they go 6 o'clock hour, 7 o'clock hour, and then the 8 o'clock hour is the repeat of the 6 o'clock hour until about 8:30.
Yeah, I remember that.
Until about 8:30, mm-hmm. And then they come back on and do the last 30 minutes live.
Well, I would think, maybe not on Fox or Sinclair, but I would think that a currently sitting Supreme Court Justice, Associate Justice's son, was a high mucky muck in a bank that had very close dealings in big numbers with and for one Donald J. Trump. I would think that is worthy of at least a mention, or better yet, outright prolonged discussion. But that's just me.
Yeah, doesn't that? Silly us.
Well, I'm going to do something now that I wouldn't ordinarily do. And you know from my calls over the months, you know that I don't normally do this. But I would like to engage in a little food porn.
Oh, do, please. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Last night, I whipped together a big batch of my favorite summertime meal. And I just want to share that with the listeners so they can try it at home.
Oh, do please.
And hopefully be as impressed with it as I've been over the years. And it's not a recipe that I saw written anywhere or demonstrated on TV. It's just something that I decided, I've got this, 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 and this, and I can get that. And then once I have all of this, 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 and that, I can whip something together that works like this. And here's what it is. It's a cool and refreshing combination of chicken, tricolor rotini, Italian spiced tomatoes, finely chopped black olives, and garbanzo beans.
That sounds delightful.
Sometimes known as chickpeas.
Right.
Isn't that what they're called?
Yes.
Okay. What you do is you chill all the...
Yeah, that's right.
Chill all of the canned items. And then you drain the garbanzos in a big flat dish, if you've got it. A flat, not pan, but like a Tupperware container. Drain the garbanzos, which you have chilled, and then mash them up into a paste. Okay, then drain and add the Italian spiced tomatoes. And you have already cooked and cooled and then diced three chicken breasts. So you add that to the mix, as well as the finely chopped olives. And this is going to vary from person to person according to taste. But at that point, I added liberal amounts of Newman's Own Caesar dressing.
That's good
and
stuff.
And buttermilk ranch.
The creamy or not creamy?
The not creamy. Okay.
Hmm.
Newman's Own Caesar dressing and buttermilk ranch dressing. A couple of good-sized dollops of mayo. A spritz of Goulden's brown mustard. And this is going to be rare because not everybody has this. I even put in a tablespoon of Arthur Bryant's original barbecue sauce, along with lemon
well,
pepper.
Well, based on past remarks, I think you'd put that on ice cream and cornflakes, too.
How did you ever guess? But add to that lemon pepper, seasoned salt, and some Kroger salt-free zesty table blend, and then mix all that up very, very well. Okay. Assuming you have cooked the two boxes of tricolor rotini.
And the chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, the chicken was cooked, too, right?
Yes. Well, you'd have to cook it.
Yeah, it's not chicken sashimi. No.
Anyway, you've cooked and chilled a little bit the tricolor rotini. Okay. Take half of that and put it in a big pot. And give it some good spritzes of the Caesar and buttermilk ranch dressing, okay? And then add half of the mixture of all those chilled items that we prepared and mix all of that real, real well. And then add the other half of the cooked rotini, which you've also spritzed with Caesar and buttermilk ranch dressing, and then add the other half of the mixture of all the chilled goodies. And then mix that up until it can hardly stand another moment. Cover and chill it in the refrigerator for a couple of hours. And I'm telling you, that is a taste treat for summertime that cannot be beat.
Oh, I take no convincing on that. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's my little
This time of year, I love that you know, just cool, somewhat light. I mean, it reminds me of my favorite simple summer salad. Simple summer salad. Namely, just because we're getting up. We're not there yet, but we will soon be into into fresh, ripe tomatoes here. A sweet onion, chopped. Not tiny chopped, but, you know, chopped.
Coarse chopped.
Yeah, there we go. That's the word I'm looking for. Look at you.
Thank you. Just call me Julia. Julia's
yeah.
The child.
Or a practitioner of the art of word knowing. A coarsely chopped tomato and a coarsely chopped sweet onion, and a coarsely chopped, nice ripe avocado.
Mm.
Toss the three together. Throw in some, sprinkle it with some kosher salt. And splash it with balsamic vinegar, and the fats in the avocado will react with the vinegar and make an almost sort of creamy dressing. And and serve that ice cold on a piece of romaine, if you can find some that doesn't have like E. coli on it. And it's just damn delightful, especially when the temperature crosses like 90 degrees or even 85.
Mm. And that's very basic. It's very simple to make, and just.
And the other one the other the other thing that my grandmother always had on the table was this time of year, because it was coming out of her garden, a bowl full of thinly sliced cucumbers and thinly sliced rings of onion. And she'd make a cold.
How about tomato?
No. Just cucumbers and onions, and she'd make a. An ice water white vinaigrette around it. And if you want to get weird, you can use a little bit of sweetened condensed milk in that, and it's absolutely astonishingly good.
Mm. I think my grandmother used to make something like that, thinking back at it.
By the way, I have an update on the camera issue that you raised a little bit ago, Scott. Arnold, who knows these things, says cameras are set connected to a comlink checker for color balance, and they're often left unattended. He says several Fox contractors have told me they know the network is shot, but it's checked, man. So there's not even anybody running the cameras. They're just statically aimed. Because, among other things, it's dangerous.
Because, how do you mean dangerous?
Because maggots.
Crowd?
Maggots.
Oh. Mm,
fake news. And if you're standing back there, he can check you and direct the maggots' attention to you. And if you should happen to turn around and try to view a protester or something, woe betide you.
Mm. Oh, by the way, on the matter of the recipe, I left out an ingredient, and it's not essential, but I prefer it. Kroger has this 5-cheese Parmesan in the spaghetti sauce aisle.
I've tried
it's
that.
Like, I forget what the cheeses are, but it's Parmesan, Romano, and 3 other cheeses.
Asiago and mozzarella.
Yeah. Sprinkle some of that at early on as you're preparing the chilled items, the garbanzos and the tomatoes and stuff. Oh, it's just a blend of, and the thing is, it's light, but it's substantial.
Well, by the way, I have to tell you, Ron, from the far not frozen north, currently now spending a little time here in the hills and hollers, says, now that's two recipes I've heard so far, and nobody's said garlic yet. Garlic is the spice of life, damn it. No garlic in your garbanzo chicken salad?
Other than the lemon pepper that I use has got not just lemon and pepper, but there's like garlic and little, I guess, celery salt or something in it.
Yeah, it's probably in there. And by the way, the pizzas I made over the weekend, I used the Simply Organic pizza sauce that Kroger has there, and it was wonderful. It served its purpose quite well.
I'll tell you something. Speaking of Kroger and shopping, and I've made 2 calls now to the Dr. Pepper Snapple people, who also make my soda pop of choice, which is Diet Right. For the better part of 2 months, I have been unable to find Diet Right in the 2-liter bottle, and here of late, it's even made itself scarce in the cans. And I don't like soda from a can; I like it from the 2-liter bottle. And I had to call those people again today. And they tell me half a dozen stores to go to. And I go to them. And there's no diet right. And it's pissing me off.
Well, that's a shame because we have it Oplenty here.
Oh, did you get me a Tasty Cake Merrimack or Monitor Pie?
I actually looked for them in a couple of convenience stores. I did not see them.
I'm surprised 7-Eleven didn't have them.
7-Eleven was not one of the places I went because I didn't see a 7-Eleven.
Well, there you go. That's incredible. No 7-Eleven where you were in the D.C. area?
No.
If you were in Arlington, there's one on every other. They're like Starbucks. You used to be anyway.
Well, it was.
Can you remember those old 7-Eleven commercials? The guy with the really distinct voice. And I can't really imitate him. I think I may have sent you examples of his commercials in the 70s. They were radio commercials.
Oh,
and he
yeah.
had kind of his voice was quite similar to Dabbs Greer, who played the old man in The Green Mile.
Yeah.
Okay, but it wasn't quite that. It was sort of close, but not exactly. And I can't think of his name to save me. Oh, well, it'll come to me.
Yeah, when you 3 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah, when I least expect it.
Let's see, note coming in from Bill in Allentown. You and Scott just made me seriously hungry. Tell Scott to stop, please.
Well, I did that to my cousin's wife, Cheryl, who lives in Annandale, Virginia. I did it to her, and I also did it to my own cousin, I can't think of her name, Carol, down in North Carolina. She's a cousin from my mother's side of the family. I posted that recipe on my Facebook earlier, and she said I'm making her hungry. It is a really good summertime dish.
Oh, it sounds it. It absolutely sounds it.
You can have it as a main function. Or you can serve it as a side, you know, a side dish. I had a big bowl of it for lunch today, and I'll have probably an equally big bowl of it tonight.
You won't be bored with it.
No, hell no, because it's like your taste buds get up and dance. Because it's got all the flavors. And you wouldn't think that those chopped black olives would add anything to it.
Oh yeah, they do. They have a lovely briny sweetness to them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of olives, while I was at the store getting all this stuff last night, I picked up a jar of regular olives. I couldn't find the queen size ones that I put in my martini. This is my problem. I should have begun having martinis every night a month ago, when old Punky decided to fly off to the choir eternal. I kept thinking of the dead parrot skit.
Right, yeah, pining for the fjords.
Oh, man. And I sent an email yesterday to this local guy who hand-raised cockatiels to find out if he sells just to stores or if he sells to individuals. And I haven't heard back from him. I'm jonesing for a bird. I know that sounds weird, but I want a bird.
Well, you're used to the companionship in the company. And frankly, they're a little more personable than a fish.
Well, yeah, I mean, fish are beautiful. Some of those tropical fish are, you know.
Oh, I've got a buddy who has a betta that he has named Hollywood.
My first job out of high school was in the print shop of a pretty substantial pet product wholesaler that serve most of the eastern seaboard, at least the mid-Atlantic region, and I don't think they're in business anymore, but they not only sold products, foods and trinkets and collars and dishes and sweater vests and all kinds of stuff, you know, for standard animals like dogs and cats and, you know, ferrets or whatever.
Rats,
but
bats,
even,
elephants, yeah.
They even sold fish. I went back into the tropical fish area of the warehouse once, and it was like walking into the tropics because they have to keep it, you know, hot and humid. And there was just tank after tank after tank of oh, lovely, graceful fishies. Like, I don't know if any were named Wanda, but, you know, lovely fish of that sort. And I was the, we would print our own newsletters. And when I say we, I mean me. We had a guy who was the graphic artist and the director of the department, and I was the printer on this old offset press. And if you wanted to do four color, you had to make the black run and then make the other color run and then make the other color run. And, oh, it was primitive. But, man, we had a lot of customers, you know, between the catalog and the sales letters and the you know, the monthly product newsletter. That was my first job in out of high school. I was, even when my senior year, I would get out of school like 2:30 or something in the afternoon and go in and work until 6:30, you know, during the school year, and then full-time once summer came. But there were just way too many chemicals, and cleanup was a mess.
Oh, God, I can only imagine.
But some of those skills, I mean, have served me well, you know, the typing and the layout and having the eye for it. And now with, you know, computers and laser printers, you can do all that on a desktop.
Just about, yeah. Well, yeah, no, not even just about. You absolutely can. All right, well, I will leave you to go and enjoy a bowl of your... What do you call that anyway?
Just the rainbow pasta, yummy stuff, refreshing cool salad, I guess.
There's got to be an acronym in there somewhere, Scott.
I'll come up with a name for it, and then I'll tell you what it is. One more thing before we go, because every time I call, I keep thinking to mention it, and then I don't. A long time ago, you mentioned that you attended school in Columbia, Missouri. Is that right?
No, actually, about 25 miles to the east of Columbia.
So where would that have been?
Fulton.
Fulton, yeah, okay, I know where that is. The reason it struck my little ears, when I left Kansas City around 91 or late 90, after living there about a decade, I was married at the time, and my wife got a job with the state of Missouri in Jefferson City. And we used to go up to Columbia fairly often because it's only like 30 miles up the road. Jefferson City was another place.
Yeah, Jeff City was about 30 miles south of Fulton, and Columbia was about 20, 25 miles west. There's not a lot to Fulton, and we spent a lot of time in Columbia. Not so much Jeff City, but Columbia had Mizzou there, so it was a pretty hopping and happening college town.
Somebody the other day mentioned Nevada.
Nevada, Missouri, yes, and California,
yeah,
Missouri,
yeah.
And yeah.
Well, my first wife grew up in Nevada. She was born in West Plains, but she grew up in Nevada. And you talk about a colorful family. Her, you know, biologically schizoid. And her mom was a Church of the Nazarene religious fanatic. And how the daughter turned out halfway right, I'll never know. Of course, no, we only stayed married about 10 years. Not quite 10 years, so.
Well, then it was halfway, right.
Anyway, All right, let me let you get back to the previously scheduled program. And turn those cameras, kids. We've got to see those minuscule crowds and that mass of wretched refuse from humanity that constitutes the maggots.
All righty. You take it easy, Scott. Exactly. Later now.
Take it any way I can get it.
Exactly. Bye now.
Yep.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Just to give you a little follow-up on the mess down in Greenbrier County. And Greenbrier County, you've got to understand, has a lot of money in it. I mean, the Greenbrier's there, Lewisburg's there, and there's a lot of folks who have moved in there from elsewhere. But Ron sent me a note a few minutes ago saying, don't ask Kelly, because we heard from Kelly. She was kind of halfway to apoplectic. Don't ask Kelly about Trump excesses. She was on her way back from Roanoke this evening, and she was stopped for 45 minutes on the interstate for Trump's motorcade. From the off-ramp at Lewisburg, I know it will, there was a state trooper at every intersection and business driveway. I came through a bit earlier and counted 17 badged vehicles, 6 unbadged Suburbans. Apparently that was just the first wave. And he's only staying for a 2-hour dinner, and they do it all over again. All those state troopers are working gratis, right? Wrong. Lots of overtime getting paid there. Lots of overtime. Ron continues and says, I was on the lookout for ICE vehicles. But perhaps even those dullards have figured out that West Virginia is not a prime location for migrants to hide from the man. Oh, but they rousted some a year or so ago down in Beaver. Yes, really, down in Beaver, West Virginia. And all of a sudden the maggots were like, but wait, we like him. Yeah. Oh, speaking of maggots, the maggots are terribly, terribly upset with Wally World right now. They've launched a boycott Walmart campaign because over on the Walmart website, you can apparently purchase a shirt that says impeach and then has the number 45 under it. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Ryan Fournier is chairman of the Students for Trump, and he said, what kind of message are you trying to send? Well, they're just trying to sell shit to anybody who'll buy shit. Because I'm sure over at Walmart.com or on their app, I'm sure you can also buy a I Want Trump to Grab Me by the shirt as well. Walmart, meanwhile, went into complete sweat condition alpha, issuing a statement to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda saying, these items were sold by third-party sellers on our open marketplace and were not offered directly by Walmart. We're removing these types of items pending review of our marketplace policies. Meanwhile, Ryan Fournier never got around to saying, oh, yeah, and I also remember when they were selling Nazi stuff and Confederate stuff, but I didn't raise a stink about that because that doesn't really bother me that much. And today's fun fact, courtesy of Irish Dave, Lebanon is about midway between Nevada and Cuba, Missouri, all in the Show Me State. Yes, right? Where is it relative to California? I remember California, Missouri, and Nevada. Anybody remember? Oh, by the way, 25 minutes before the hour, we had $180 to raise this evening. We're at zero. And there's we'll have to talk about it at some point, how to figure out how to work this $1,000 challenge from our buddy Scott. But right now there's $180 on the table, $180 to raise, no challenges or anything, but that's where that is. Do we remember the man that was referred to by the late great Bart Kopp as Denny the Sweaty Wrestler Hastert? The minute Denny Hastert became Speaker of the House, he set off alarm bells for Bart Kopp. Bart Kopp just looked at him and went, yeah, something ain't right. And then it turned out that Denny got himself busted for making hush-hush payments to the boys that he liked to have the sexy time with. And I'll probably get some shit via email for this, but I'll go ahead and say it. Wrestling of the athletic high school college variety, it really does have some overtones of homoeroticism to it. I mean, just, yeah. Well, for those of us who remember Denny Hastert, we have a new tweak to memory in the form of a guy who got completely humiliated in a hearing the other day with Rod Rosenstein. Remember, the House had their big double secret probation hearing about the FBI doing the poor Trump campaign all dirty like and trying to intimidate good God fearing Trumpansies. Remember that? No, of course. Well, it stung something fierce because Jim Jordan was there and he was gonna expose the corruption of the FBI right there in front of God and everybody. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but I've got the audio kind of bookmarked because it's just a precious little moment. Jim Jordan's got his smart man glasses on, and he's leaning forward, and he's going to offer a withering examination of Rod Rosenstein, remember?
Time of the gentleman has expired. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rosenstein, why are you keeping information from Congress?
Congressman, I'm not keeping any information from Congress that it's appropriate.
In a few minutes, Mr. Rosenstein, I think the House of Representatives is going to say something different.
I don't agree with you, Congressman. I don't believe that's what they're going to say. And if they do, they'll be mistaken.
I disagree, but I think in a few minutes, the House of Representatives is going to go on record saying you haven't complied with requests from a separate and equal branch of government, that you haven't complied with subpoenas, and you got 7 days to get your act together. I think that's what's going to happen in a few. And that's not Jim Jordan. I think that's the House. I think that's a majority of the House of Representatives. In just a few minutes, I think that's going to happen.
Jim Jordan, by the way, is one of your more important members of the Feedum carcass. Yes.
I want to know why you won't give us what we've asked for,
sir. I certainly hope that your colleagues are not under that impression. That is not accurate, sir. And
it is accurate. We have caught you hiding
information, Mr. Chairman, can we allow the witness to answer? Mr. Chairman, point of order. We can go to Mr. Jordan's press conference and listen to him, but we came here to hear from the witness.
The time belongs to the gentleman.
Mr. Rosenstein?
Can we allow him to answer?
We have caught you hiding information.
We can allow him to answer.
He will be permitted to answer when Mr. Jordan...
Why do we have them here?
We'll allow him additional time to answer.
Why are they not allowed to answer?
The gentleman's out of order. The gentleman from Ohio is recognized.
Mr. Rose, let me make this one point, then I'll let
you
answer.
Mr. Jordan, I'd like
to make this one point,
sir,
where we've caught you hiding information.
Sir?
Then you can answer. Why did you hide the fact that Peter Strzok and Judge Contreras were friends? Why did you redact that in the documents you gave to us? Judge Contreras is kind of important. FISA court judge, more importantly, just as importantly, the judge that heard Mike Flynn's case. Why did you try to hide that from us?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to respond. I've heard you make those sort of allegations publicly on TV.
It's I got the
and, and if
I got
you let
right
me respond,
here.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, he should be given
right
the opportunity.
Now, Mr.
To
Jordan,
answer.
It's redacted.
I am the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Okay? I'm not the person doing the redacting. I'm responsible for responding to your concerns as I have. I have a team with me, sir. It's just a fraction of the team that's doing this work, and whenever you brought issues to my attention, I have taken appropriate steps to remedy them. So your statement that I'm personally keeping information from you, trying to conceal information...
You're the boss, Mr. Rosenstein.
That's correct. And my job is to make sure that we respond to your concerns. We have, sir. Now, I've appointed Mr. Lausch, who is managing that production. And my understanding is it's actually going very well, sir. So I appreciate your concerns.
Again, I think the House of Representatives is going to say otherwise.
But your use of this to attack me personally is not wrong.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. May the witness be permitted to answer the question?
It's not personal.
Proposed?
The gentleman will suspend. The witness is going to have an opportunity to say whatever he wants at the end of Mr. Jordan's 5 minutes. Until the
it is
end
not
of those
personal.
5 minutes, they're his time.
I appreciate your service. It's not personal.
Yeah, it's not personal. I'm just going to sit here and lob accusations at you, and I'm going to keep talking every time you try to answer, so that you cannot actually point out the fact that I'm a miserable, lying sack of maggot shit.
We just want the information. Why did you tell Peter Strzok not to answer our questions yesterday? When I asked Peter Strzok if he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson, he gave us the answer he gave us dozens of times. On advice of FBI counsel, I can't answer that question. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate your sincere concerns, but I didn't give Peter Strzok any instructions. If there was some problem with the instructions he had, I'll be happy to look into it.
Not what his FBI lawyer said.
Mr. Jordan, when you find some problem with a production or with questions, it doesn't mean that I'm personally trying to conceal something from you. It means we're running an organization that's trying to follow the rules, and we're going to respond.
You know what was interesting? When I asked him if he'd ever talked to Bruce Orr, he said he had. Said he had three times in 2016 and 2017. Then I asked him, have you ever talked to Nellie Orr? And he said, no, I haven't. I said, well, why can you answer that question? Because Nellie Orr worked for Glenn Simpson, worked for Fusion. He could answer that question, but he couldn't answer because FBI counsel told him he couldn't. He couldn't answer the question whether he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson, a journalist. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you saying it isn't personal. Sometimes it feels that way. How do I know, sir? I mean, you interviewed Mr. Strzok. I didn't, so I can't
works answer. Works for you. Doesn't work for us.
There are 115,000 people who work for me, sir.
Mr. Rosenstein, did you threaten staffers on the House Intelligence Committee? Media reports indicate...
Oh, wait, we're going to have to back up because this is the precious part. Get the hockey puck and the duct tape. Not because it's going to be outrageous, but because you're going to laugh so loud that the neighbors might be a little bit bothered.
Sure, and I appreciate you saying it isn't personal. Sometimes it feels that way. How do I know, sir? I mean, you interviewed Mr. Strzok. I didn't. So I can't
works
answer.
For you. Doesn't work for us.
There are 115,000 people who work for me, sir.
Mr. Rosenstein, did you threaten staffers on the House Intelligence Committee? Media reports indicate you did.
Media reports are mistaken.
Sometimes. But this is what they said. Having the nation's number one law enforcement officer threaten to subpoena your calls and emails is downright chilling. Did you threaten to subpoena their calls and emails?
No, sir, and there's no way to subpoena phone calls.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying. I'm reading what the press said. I'm reading what the press
said. I would suggest that you not rely on what the press says, sir.
Well, I didn't ask.
Oh, that burned. Ooh, that stung. Sorry, you can't subpoena a phone call. Because it's true. And as Darlene in Connecticut pointed out, he slayed that little prick attack dog, Jim Jordan. He was accusing Rosenstein of perjury. And he got away with it. And the chair of the committee would not rein him in, despite the scurrilous nature of what he was up to. Scott just wrote back in. Jim Jordan deserves a hearty you. Yes, okay, we will. Let's do. Here, let's check in with Professor Spicoli on Jim Jordan here.
You dick!
And see, that might actually be a double entendre, because the reason for playing that was to set the following up. Jim Jordan is a big one for freedom and God and Jesus and freedom and liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. But before he was ever a member of the Freedom Carcass, he was a wrestling coach over to the Ohio State University there in Columbus. And there's a little bit of a something going on with the wrestling program at the Ohio State University in Columbus. Happened more than 20 years ago, but it turns out that back last April, the university made an announcement that it was investigating accusations that Dr. Richard Strauss, who was the team doctor for the wrestling team there at The Ohio State University, had engaged in some sexy time sexual abuse of the wrestlers from the mid-1970s to the late 1990s. Now, for 8 years, or actually, yep, 8 years, between 1986 and 1994, Jim Jordan, defender of freedom and liberty and God and Jesus and goodness and the truth, well, he was the assistant coach of the wrestling team at The Ohio State University. And this past spring, in the wake of, the nasty business that erupted over at The Michigan State University in East Lansing, regarding the sexual abuse of female gymnasts, well, it turns out that this is a bigger problem than something that was just limited to The Michigan State University. There are now allegations down at the Caroli Gymnastics operation in Texas. And yes, as of this spring, allegations that Dr. Richard Strauss, who died in 2005, was a sexual abuser as well. NBC News interviewed three former wrestlers, and they all said it was common knowledge that Strauss showered regularly with the students, inappropriately touched them during appointments, and at one point, former head coach of the wrestling program at The Ohio State University, Russ Hellickson, who was a mentor to Jim Jordan, said that he told Dr. Strauss he was being too hands-on with the students. Okay. In particular, one former wrestler, a fellow by the name of DeSabato, who got the whole ball rolling, when Jim Jordan said, "Well, in the name of freedom and Jesus, I didn't know nothing about this." Only they don't talk like that. And he said, "I considered Jim Jordan a friend. But at the end of the day, he's absolutely lying if he says he doesn't know what was going on. He reached out to Jordan earlier this year before he went to the university and told Jordan he was going public with his allegations. Jordan's only answer, please leave me out of it." According to DeSabato, he asked me not to get him involved. Then there's Dunyasha Yetz, wrestled at Ohio State in 1993 and 94. He said they told Jim Jordan directly about the sexual abuse. Dunyasha Yetz said, "I remember I had a thumb injury and went into Strauss's office and he started pulling down my wrestling shorts. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And I went out and told Russ and Jim what happened. I wasn't having it, and they went in and talked to Strauss," they being Jim Jordan. He went on and said, "For God's sake, Strauss's locker was right there next to Jordan's, and Jordan even said he'd kill him if he tried anything with him." You get a lot of that, hyper butch kind of, "I'd certainly kick his ass if he ever touched my winky." All the time he's sitting there thinking, "Why won't he touch my winky?" Uh, Yet said, yeah, Jordan's a great guy. We would have had, we had all these great talks with him, and he talked about how one day he'd be the president of the United States. So it's sad for me to hear that he's denying knowing about Strauss. I don't know why he would, unless it's a cover-up. Either you're in on it, or you're a liar. Everyone pretty much in agreement that there's no way that Jim Jordan could have avoided the rumors because it was all over the locker room. One nameless ex-wrestler said, I love Jimmy to death. It was a head-scratcher to me why he would say he didn't know anything. Doc used to take showers with the team even though he didn't do any workouts, and everybody used to snicker about how you go into his office for a sore shoulder and he tells you to take your pants down. And meanwhile, when the story broke, asked by the Columbus Dispatch, Jim Jordan said, I had not heard about any type of abuse at all. No one reported any type of abuse to me. And now the congressman's spokes creep is involved. Congressman Jordan never saw any abuse, never heard any abuse, and never had any abuse reported to him during his time as coach at Ohio State. That was Ian Fury in an email to NBC News. He didn't do it, he wasn't there, and even if he saw it, he was only following orders. Right. So, you know, it's kind of the... Well... It's got a kind of a Penn State flavor to it. He knew about it. He did nothing about it. Said nothing about it. Covered his own ass. And people like Mike DeSabato and Dinyasha Yetz and everybody else who knew it was going on and knew he knew, had talked to him about it, told him about it, heard him say, well, I'd kill him if he touched my little Johnson. Touched my little wrestler. Well, they're all lying, and Jim Jordan is as pure as the driven slush. Yeah, good stuff, that. Sure, Jim. Yeah, we've seen your performance there in hearings now, and well. You're not convincing. To date, Representative Jordan has not responded to those requests to interview him. The investigative team is continuing its efforts to schedule an interview with Representative Jordan. Anybody surprised? Among other things, he's identified as one of the most conservative representatives and a staunch ally of President Donald Trump. Sexual abusers flock. I said flock. Together. Yeah. Hey, let's go and check in with Todd before I run completely out of program. Hey, Todd.
Yo. Oh, man. You got that on point. That's a hell of a coincidence, isn't it? Correlation. And, yeah, they do flock together. But, I mean, you got me fired up, though, when you played. I happen to see a lot of those hearings. You know, in Congress. So, in other words, this is what I don't understand. And I only got a couple minutes. But, I mean, all right. So why is it okay for people potentially being investigated? Maybe even not potentially. People being investigated. A whole crew, a whole slew of people. How the fuck can they ask for documents concerning their investigation? Well, that makes no sense.
Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
No, I'm not trying to be fucking funny, man.
I'm not either. There's a different standard for Republicans. God, if we haven't figured that out after eight years of Bill Clinton and 8 years of Barack Obama, then we're never going to figure it out, Todd. There's a different standard for Republicans. These miserable little hypocritical freaks had a plum conniption because the owner of the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia gave Aunt Lydia a free cheese plate and told her to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2012, a guy who ran a cookie bakery pr- proudly refused to serve Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, not some low-level functionary, but the Vice President of the United States, and he got invited to do fundraisers for the Romney-Ryan campaign. So, you know, they can just fuck right the fuckity fuck off. Them and their little tender, damaged fifis.
Well, the hypocrisy is just incredible. Yeah, if you want a good answer. Literally, in the houses of Congress in these investigations. That's preposterous. Why are they wasting time on that? That's bullshit. Why the fuck are you... And Rod Rosenstein was right. I mean, I watched this shit. I was fascinated by it. He said, look, I am under oath. Are you under oath? Man, I'm going to tell you something. Sally Yates, she's a Republican.
They're all Republicans.
But wait a minute, that woman, listen, they should have run that woman. I would have voted for her. I mean, I would never have voted for a Republican, but damn, that's the most, come on.
There's an old school style of, you know, sort of pro-law enforcement Republican. And Republicanism runs deep through law enforcement. And
sure
it's basically a law and order Republicanism that for the most part we might disagree with on principle, but some of them, maybe on the federal level, a lot of them, and I'm not including ICE here or the DEA or the Border Patrol, but the FBI is the cream of the crop,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much the Secret Service too, and. They're supposed to be, you know, every last one of them is supposed to be Caesar's wife. Above reproach. And I think that plays into that plays into why they wind up being Republicans. I can't imagine that there's just a whole shit ton of liberal Democratic FBI agents.
I'm glad you broached that, because that's all getting lost. Anybody who understands American history, who's been paying attention, we all understand, if you even know anything about the history of the FBI, oh my God, you were supposed to be...
They've been a lot nastier than they are now.
And you know, and it's a mixed history. And that's the thing.
Going all the way back to young J. Edgar Hoover and the Palmer raids.
Well, exactly. See, I mean, we need them, but as recently, what... Not that long ago, we had the FBI. They got caught red-handed, like, in other words, twisting evidence in cases where small towns didn't have the apparatus to indict people or, you know, convict people. So they sent it to Quantico, FBI, and it's like, well, and it was a little note. Now, I'm not making this up. This is out in court. But at the same time, we need them. And, you know, but they are. What is my point? I'm not trying to get off on a tangent. I know you're showing time. But, yeah, they're overwhelmingly Republican. But this is an affront to have these assholes. This is the same bullshit they pulled on Hillary Clinton, asking her about confidential shit in an open hearing, knowing she cannot. She knew what was going on. That was a CIA operation. What is she supposed to say in open court? She can't say it. So why are you asking her these questions? So it's the same bullshit.
Yeah, and it's pure politics. You know, there's no... Jim Jordan has no interest in finding the truth. Jim Jordan has a vested interest in trying to protect Donald J. Trump at all costs. Because it plays good with the rubes back home in the district.
How many of these people are in on this compromise? Because you mentioned a couple things, and it got me thinking about that Franklin case with Boys Town way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
With the little boys, okay? Because you think about it now, the only two things you can be compromised with now, because really nobody cares what you do, is pedophilia and money. And after that, there's really nothing
else.
Well,
drugs. But it's a different...
I don't think so.
But it's a different set of standards for Republicans. Compromat is much broader for Republicans than Democrats, because not because we hold them to a different standard, but because they hold themselves to a different standard.
They're the worst ones. They're the perverts.
Of course they are.
They're
the ones who, you know, who get caught in gay liaisons while, you know, swearing they're straight or, you know, whatever. They're the ones who rumors swirl about them watching hookers pee on a bed that Barack Obama slept on. I mean, come on, that particular, the pee-pee allegation, the golden shower allegation.
Cool.
Just take that for a minute. How many maggots do you think out there heard that initial allegation and you know, of course, they publicly, they had to say, well, he's too fine a man. He's rich. He'd never do that. But privately, they were going, hell, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see somebody piss on a bed that Kenyan muslin you slurper slept on. Yes, sir. Bob,
right?
I tell you what, that's murka right there is what that is.
He's doing what I want to do, goddamn.
Yeah, that's right. I'd do it if I got a chance.
And I'd have me a .22 with a small caliber because I want it to be light. You know, and they go into all the fucking gyrations of the firearm and all that bullshit. Oh, my God. But this shit, seriously, this is watching those hearings because they called them back again. But I'm telling you, we're in trouble because this stork thing is being blown out of proportion. No one's talking about the nuance.
Oh no! If the maggots could, they would rip Peter Strzok limb from limb.
How do you pronounce his name?
Strzok, Strzok, Strzok.
Strzok.
Silent
okay.
Z.
Okay, yeah, I have to be on top of that. Strzok. Okay.
It's my job.
Yeah. So that, you know, so what I'm saying is that. This is it's not looking good because the seat is already sowed, but I'm hoping that the investigators will be able to make this clear. But you know what's so interesting? Remember, and this is before everyone's eyes, early on, way in front of everybody, the hyena, the gargoyle. Also known as Giuliani, he said, oh, we got an October surprise coming. It's something coming. And he already said it. Well, I got friends in the FBI, you know, post 911.
Sure.
Friends in New York. So, you know, so it's like, okay, you want to talk about leaks? Really? Seriously? That's where you want to go with this? You know, so
well,
it's
there's,
a reasonable
I mean, but,
type
but there,
of thing.
But there's leaks and then there's, you know, leaks.
There's leaks and there's leaks. And most law enforcement is leaning, you know, leans, as always, in our lifetime, leaning Republican. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. So when they say law and order, we know what they mean.
Well, and law and order all too often in this country means cracking the skulls of people that the power structure determines need their skulls cracked. And all too often that means people with skin darker than a brown paper bag. Or people who don't subscribe to a nice, tepid, mild-mannered politics.
That's what Frank Rizzo said. And look, he went from being a cop to being the chief of police to being the mayor.
Right.
For a while. You know, and that's the truth.
Then all of a sudden some row houses blowed up.
You know, I mean, come on. You know what? And this is the truth about Mumia. He is a political prisoner because he's what got a lot of people like me interested in the news. Because at one time he was a Black Panther. He was, you know. But so he understood police brutality. And what pissed the police off and the mayor is that he would have a scanner with him. And he worked for WDAS. Like, so I guess that's what you call back then disco station or whatever. And, but he would have real news. Like, he would have the real, like, you know, at 63rd in Osage, or at 65th in Baltimore, you know, Southwest Philly was always on fire.
65th in Baltimore. Oh, man, come on.
Well, see, you remind me of something here, and I was kind of going to save it for tomorrow, but not really. Let me just, as we wrap things up, let me run through a couple of stories. Okay, first of all, I got video here of a drunk off-duty cop who gets in a collision with a citizen, off-duty NYPD officer, crashed his car into another car in Brooklyn. And then the cop took off running. The victim chased him down, yelling, "You fucking dickhead, get out of the car. And you're a fucking cop, holy shit." Okay? Well, the cop responded, off-duty cop, apparently loaded, responded by punching dude in the face. Okay?
I'm listening.
Well, let's go down to your neck of the woods now. That was Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So high schools have reading lists. You may have already heard about this.
No, but I know what a reading list is.
And you know, students have to pick two books out of five and read them, because reading is good things.
Mm-hmm.
It's for English 1 at Wando High School, north of Charleston.
Charleston? Yep.
And there's a book on the reading list. There's a science fiction book called 23 Minutes. There's a book called Going Bovine. I don't know what that's about. But there's another book called The Hate You Give. These are all fiction. And then there's a book called The Hate You Give. And then there's another one called All American Boys. Both of those books were New York Times bestsellers. Here's the problem. The police in South Carolina are having babies. I mean, they are having kittens with crocheted tails. Because The Hate You Give by Jason Reynolds and Brendan Keeley, I mean by Angie Thomas, rather, The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas, is told from the standpoint of a teenager. And it's about her life and the lives of those around her after her best friend, who didn't have a gun, didn't have any sort of weapon whatsoever, was blown away by the police. On the other hand, All American Boys by Jason Reynolds and Brendan Keeley, well, one of the main characters in that book has the shit beat out of him by a police officer after the kid's accused of stealing a bag of potato chips.
No problem with that one, right?
Oh, no. The cops hate them both. They want them pulled from the reading list. Our children don't need to be reading this kind of stuff. It teaches them to distrust the police.
But wait a minute. See, that's what I was going to say. You start making me think about 451, and, you know, come on, man. We cannot have law enforcement even talking about reading material.
John Blackman is president of the Fraternal Order of Police of Tri-County Lodge Number 3. Who knew it was a fucking lodge? High signs, passwords, everything. And he said, "Freshmen, that age where the interactions with law enforcement have been very minimal. They're not driving yet. They haven't been stopped for speeding. They don't have these types of interactions. This is putting in their minds. It's almost an indoctrination of distrust of police, and we got to put a stop to that."
Oh, that's bullshit.
Well, you know, Officer Friendly there, they've probably seen a whole hell of a lot more videos of people of color getting the living shit kicked out of them, beat out of them, shot, tasered, gassed, stomped. And actually, there might be more nuance in that damn book than what they get on the YouTube videos practically every day of their lives. And John Blackman is on a crusade. There are other socioeconomic topics that are available, and they want to focus half of their effort on negativity toward the police. That seems odd to me.
Odd? What the fuck is odd about it?
So now they're going to have a committee to determine whether or not children can read about teenagers having bad, having a bad interaction with the popo.
Wow. Guess what? It starts at the top. And listen, his name is Jefferson. It was hard for me to get it out of my head, man. It's just so disgusting. How does this perjurer have a fucking job?
Well, eventually we may find out that he doesn't. But Todd, I got to get out of here, my friend. I've run way over.
Hey, thanks, man.
Don't you apologize. It's cool. We'll talk later.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks,
man. You're doing a great job, and enjoy everything.
All right, gonna later. Our buddy Todd, and we'll close out with some remarks from Matt in San Francisco. Am I confused? Asks Matt. So we, the voters, have filled the highest government positions with billionaires who don't even need a paycheck, and they're plundering through the government's money, meaning yours and mine, and when it all falls apart, we suffer, while they fly overseas to one of their many summer homes. I really am reaching a boiling point lately. I understand, man. And it's kind of tough to keep it tamped down till November. But November's all we got. That and, raising First Amendment style hell wherever the opportunity arises, when you catch these scoundrels and poltroons, doing what comes so godforsaken naturally to them. Thanks, Matt. And so we're out of here. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. I guess the fundraising goal will be $380 tomorrow. And remember, there's a matching challenge, courtesy of our buddy Scott, to put the horn on the road toward the end of this month. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, moderating in the chat room. Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan, moderating earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thank you to those happy few who keep this program on the air. And thanks to everybody who shares your precious finite time in engaging in this ongoing conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.